So, good morning, everyone. I was just now sitting and I was thinking, with my eyes closed, I was thinking, wouldn't it be nice if this was 45 minutes of sitting, silent sitting? Right? I mean, oh gosh, where's the support when you need it? Okay, so someone just suggested I speak up, so let me know, because I tend to drop into...
There's like a loud thing right
there. Yeah, okay.
There's also space for chairs here if you
want to
come closer.
So I'm actually really happy to be able to share with y'all this morning. You know, this is the...
We need you to speak.
Oh, yeah. See? For me, this is like the cradle, right? It's a place where I can drop one of the barriers, one of the walls that I carry around in society. And so when you drop a wall, when you drop an energy that's always engaged in defense, you have more space to do things with that energy, right? So I call it the cradle because, you know, I think of the cradle as a place, as an infant where you felt more safe and you were kind of wrapped in things that took care of you and you weren't using your energy to defend yourself in the world. So for me, when I'm in spaces where there's POC, majority POC, where that energy is such that it can take care of that defensiveness can come down. And now my energy is free to do something more creative and to maybe step more into love, right? And that's kind of what I want to talk about this morning is how do we get to this place where we can start dropping those defensiveness actions and feelings, even when it's not in a space where it's majority POC, or it's a majority female, or it's a majority immigrant, or it's a majority non-identifying gender roles, or it's a majority working class, or it's a majority, whatever that space that we fit in society where we identify ourselves with that may happen to be a marginalized existence, an existence where we are living outside of our power, outside of our clarity, and outside of our freedom, and relative to another, yeah? Relative to another. Because that's kind of what living the identity of a marginalized person is, right? It's living relative to another in that relative power, non-power dynamic, right? We, as people of color, we live relative to what white society condones as normal and socially acceptable. And we build our lives relative to that, right? We try not to make white people uncomfortable. And so we do a lot of things. It requires a lot of energy to do that. And then when we get into spaces where it's majority POC or all POC, we don't step into that doing or being anymore because we've stepped out of that construction that says, this is what we are relative to you. And it's the same with male-identified and female-identified folks, right? Most females-identified folks still, we walk into male-dominated space. We're still condoning and we're acting, most of us, relative to that male figure. And it doesn't matter the capacity, you know, as a person medically trained in this country, as a female, I trained at Hopkins Medical School. I was still relative to all the men there. Didn't matter that you're a doctor, right? It's still like that. The glass ceiling is the glass ceiling, right? And it's like that. Immigrants, we are relative to U.S. native-born people, even though everybody's immigrant, but anyway, that's a history that we're not going to tap into right now. But as it lives today, I'm still always relative to American-born people, always, because they happen to always remind me that I'm not born here, you know. And many of you may do too, that are born here unknowingly. It happens, trust me. So it's always a relativeness, huh? And that relativeness, it takes energy. It takes energy. And so our path of practice is about freedom. It's about freedom. And the breathing, the walking, the eating mindfully, this is all a path to our freedom. Call it what you will, salvation, radical revolution. That's the true revolution, actually, the one inside. It's all taking us there. This path, this practice is a tool that's taking us there that we can't get too caught up in, and yet we have to understand that it's going to help us get there. But we can't get too attached to it. But we need it, and so we're going to walk it. It's kind of the ultimate and the historical, right? We're working in the historical as we're also recognizing and realizing the ultimate. It's all happening together, and it only happens when we're aware. When we're aware. So, I titled the talk today, Letting Go So We Can Be Whole. And what I really want to talk about is letting go of these identities that we have kind of glued ourselves into in such a way that it's holding on to our pain too tightly that we're missing our freedom from it. So what do I mean by that? I mean that our worlds are created by how we identified ourselves, right? The practice in Dharma, if we use Dharma language, we vision the world, we live the world, everything gets categorized into form, meaning the body, feelings, the way we feel, the perceptions we have of ourselves and others, our mind, the mental formations that's going through our mind, and consciousness, right? So I'm going to write that down, and then we're going to leave it alone. Okay, I'm sorry, because we have kind of a 3D thing going on here. It's hard for everyone to see. And I don't want to hurt the tree. Or the ancestors that are on the tree. So... So this is kind of the way we make up our world right here, into these five categories. Everything gets arranged, and we see the world in this way. And we identify ourselves based on how we're feeling or living or acting into these five things. Our body, how we feel right now, I feel like this, how I perceive myself, I am a woman of color, I am an immigrant, right? I'm a person who survived abuse, I'm this, I'm that. We identify like that. We identify and we use these five ways or formations to let ourselves be identified. So, what I want to talk about is how we cling to our identity and where we might start letting go of the pain of that identity while still allowing ourselves to be part of a tribe, part of community, right? So we're here because we've identified as POC. And this is a beautiful, loving, nourishing, healing thing. We've come together and we're learning how to heal together. And then there's this other part of our identity, the trauma of being a person of color, the anger that we hold and sometimes we can't control, the rage, the frustration, the fear, the sense of no self-worth, the sense of stepping behind, letting others pass by. Sometimes we don't even know why we do it. We just do it because it's programmed in our DNA from our parents, our grandparents, and our ancestors. Unknowingly, sometimes we do this. So how do we distinguish the identity that nourishes us in our tribes and the peace that holds us back and holds on to the pain? And we can do that. We can totally do that. And actually, I think that's what we have to do to start to really free ourselves, right? So one of the ways we can do that is this path of practice, this mindfulness path. That's why we're here. We have this... We have this way of thinking about pain around arrows. So this is the person. I am not an artist. So pain's real. You know, someone calls us some name because of what we look like. Someone doesn't promote us. That's real. Those are all real things. Those are painful things. Those are things that impact us because of who we are in the skin. That's the first arrow. It's real. Nobody's denying this, right? Just nobody's denying that racism is here and thriving. The White House, I mean. So that's real. That's a pain. And the other one, the second arrow, right, that happens with that pain is all the stuff that we still carry in us from any one of those pains that might have occurred in the past. So if we take that heart out, and I'm not trying to take anybody's heart out, but it'll just help us. You know, this one's real, right? Because it's kind of like an injury. There's a wound, there's inflammation, it gets red, it's hot, sometimes causes us fever. And this is how the body would react when it gets an injury. Well, it's the same thing when we get hurt. Heart, it's a wound. The body reacts, the mind reacts, it cowers in, it takes care, right? It's normal. This is healthy. This is what we do. Just like when we get redness and inflammation, it's the body taking care of a wound. It's healing it. A fever is normal. It's the body saying that I'm putting all the cells there to take care of that. It doesn't feel good, right? Fevers make us feel horrible. But that's actually the body's natural immune system taking care of itself, right? Bringing the cells it needs to do that. Well, on that same body cellular level is the way we respond in our hearts and our minds when we get hurt. The thing is that, and I'm going to take a leap here, is that the way the immune system is set up, so that when you get another, let's say you get a cut and cells recognize this, or you get exposed to a virus or a bacteria, the cells recognize it. And then you get exposed to that virus and that bacteria again, the same one. The cells remember. So when that comes again, that we can call it the second arrow. You know, it's the first one, or we can call it, it can be an injury, or let's do the virus because everybody's getting sick these days. The cells come in and they take care, and there are all different kinds of cells, right? There are cells that come and produce antibodies or chemicals that take care of it. There are cells that come and actually try to eat the virus or the bacteria, right? There are cells that just hang out in the back and tell someone else to come and do something. So there's this beautiful, complex system in our body at work when one little virus gets in, right? They're so smart and intelligent because when the second one comes in, it knows what to do. It knows whether it should engulf it or whether it should stay back and let it hang around just long enough and knowing that it'll be taken away, right? Bless you. I told you, these viruses. So there's memory, right? It's the same thing with the hurts we get when people treat us a certain way, the traumas that we keep reliving, which is that we get the first arrow. Someone treats us badly because of we're black or brown. And someone else comes along. And they might be acting maybe similarly again. So a month later, a week later. But because our mind's not developed, that's it, developed. And when I say developed, I mean developed on this path of practice, this path of clarity and understanding and love. We don't know how to take care of that second hurt. And so what happens is that we go all out again. We go on all out like the first response that the immune cells. We bring everything. The whole army comes on board. That's what we do when we get re-traumatized. And what this path does is it helps us to distinguish what is happening in front of us now and what's happened in the past that's been stored. It helps us bring into mind in that very moment the clarity so we can distinguish present moment activity and something that's happened in the past. So what do I mean by that? Am I making sense? Yeah? Okay. So this ability for our mind to act in this complicated way of clarity, the way our immune system is able to take care of everything when it happens. This is what this path of practice allows. Now, a lot of people of color have autoimmunity diseases, right? And for those who do, and this can be something like the most common example, especially in black and brown people, is lupus, right? And what is autoimmune disease? It's when the body reacts to its own self. The immune system is not recognizing what is happening in the moment, and it just attacks the cells, and it's not supposed to, right? So that's kind of what our mind's doing when it's untrained and it doesn't have clarity, is it's reacting and not responding appropriately. Now, don't get me wrong when I say not appropriately. You know, like, well, that person just did this to me. What do you mean? That's real. You just said racism exists, right? And it does. And it's clear. And every day in Baltimore, depending on where I walk, I can testify to that. But whether or not we just automatically, like an autoimmune disease, whether or not we automatically respond to that everyday occurrence without mindfulness, without awareness, this is the distinction that we have to make. This is where that identity with our tribe as people of color has to start becoming wise, investigate, so that it can distinguish how we take care of it in this moment, whether or not we're reacting to something that happened before, whether or not we're reacting to something that didn't even happen to us, but happened to our mother or father or grandparents, because that's all still in us. We're still carrying the trauma. Kyrie Jewel yesterday spoke about intergenerational trauma. This is real stuff, y'all. Post-traumatic generational trauma is real. We suffer. People of color, descendants of Jewish people, Native Indigenous people, when they're, you know, acting in these ways that people couldn't understand, why are the children acting in these ways? They can't identify anywhere that they experienced this kind of trauma, that they would have these kind of reactions. And then slowly and slowly identifying it within the community, and then slowly identifying it within that community. So we carry the trauma of our ancestors, and we've not healed it. We've not healed it yet, and we can heal it. And so this ability to come out of our identity as female, person of color, immigrant, whatever. This can happen. This is real. And when we start doing that, that's when we start distinguishing the first arrow and the second arrow. And by the way, there's 3 and 4 arrows as well. Because sometimes when we lose control completely, we keep bringing more stuff to pile on top of that first arrow. We can have another one, and we can have another one. And before you know it, we're doing something that we regret forever. And many of us have that experience. I know I have a whole ton of them, where I've responded in a way, I shouldn't say responded, I should say reacted in a way that was just this mountain of emotion, that there was just so much pain that all you want to do is push it away. And sometimes you think the way to do that is to inflict harm. So this path of practice, this slow walking, you know, what's that got to do with all this? Like, how does that take care of me being able to distinguish that I'm going from responding to something that's happening right here and now and reacting to all the past traumas that I have not been able to distinguish and see clearly the results of? How does that, what's that got to do with anything, right? So I think most of you know already, because you're here. And like I mentioned earlier, the first night, you took your time to come here. So you've already touched something. You've already touched some clarity that's allowing you to start to touch or be free from the identity that's clinging to the pain and the trauma, even while it's clinging to the community, right? So you walk slowly. This morning we did slow walking meditation. We were advised or instructed to notice when our feet touch the ground, to step into it, to linger there, to just be there with it each step. We were advised or suggested that we use our breath. And we've been talking about that a lot, using our breath. When we eat, we've been instructed or advised to notice what we're putting in our mouth, the colors of the food, the sensation in our tongue, where that food came from, When we sit, we're following our breath, or we're being guided to notice the breath in the body, notice if there's difference in the right side or left side, starting to become aware of where in the body there is pain and where there is spaciousness. So all these practices, this practice of mindfulness, these are practices that help us to slow down, to find stillness, and in that stillness start to see the subtlety of our lives inside the body and the mind. And we do it here in community, or we do it at home, or we do it with friends, and it might seem disconnected from the life outside, but it's really not. Because as we train ourselves to start to see more subtly and subtly, I don't know if that's a word. Is it? Subtly? Good. As we become to see that those subtle movements in our body, we start to see the mind as the thoughts come and go. We start to notice when something happens, where it happened in the body. Because everything that happens in the mind happens in the body. And when we're going to heal, it's going to be the two. So in many hands-on modality of healing, or some of them, when you release a tension in the body, whatever the modality is, you usually invite the person to notice what might have gone through their mind when they said, oh, that I just had a release. Or, oh, wow, that my muscle just relaxed. So often people are invited, what's going through your mind at that time when you felt that release? And one of the reasons for that is because the mind, whatever we're holding in the mind, those traumas, those tensions, those pains, they're also tied up in the body somewhere. It's there. It's mind and body. They're connected. They're intimate. So that place in the body that we store our pain, we can begin to notice what's connected with it. That's what the practice does. It allows us that subtle slowing down to begin to see that. And as we see it, we can begin to release it. And then we take that into the everyday life of someone speaking to us in a way that's completely unacceptable. And we're able to distinguish in that moment. We have the spaciousness of mind to acknowledge this is unacceptable, yes. But maybe it's just this. And maybe we can even begin to see the person in front of us and have some compassion to understand why they might have said that. Ignorance, maybe intentional, somewhere in between there. But it's not this automatic reaction. And it could be the same response that you have if you didn't have clarity, right? But in a way, it's different because it's informed from a space of clarity. So you might say something to that person from a gut reaction, just that pain, that harm, and you just act out, right? You didn't have the space to see it. You didn't have the observation. You were not the observer at that time. You were in it. You were that emotion. You were your anger. You were your fear. You were your sadness. You let yourself be that. You were just that. And we all know we're not just one emotion. But that's what happens when we are not able to step back and see, right? So in that moment, you didn't have that clarity. So you were your anger, and that means you acted out of anger and whatever it was that you did. I don't know. I'm doing physical things. I'm not saying that means you do that. Let's say it's a word, a response. But then think about it when we have clarity. In that moment, we see, we have, it's amazing, right? It's like time stops. At least for me, this is how it happens sometimes. People do crazy things to me, and in that moment, And a lot of us, it's not just me, but I can speak for me. And in that moment, everything slows down. And I see what they're doing. I feel my heartbeat. Everything stops. But then I can see their history. I see my history. And then in that moment, my response is different. It comes from that place of awareness. Now, but my action, that response might be the same. So it looks the same, but it's coming from two different places when we have awareness. And that's what we want. We want our freedom is that we are able to choose our response with intention. We are in control of our minds and our hearts. We're not being dragged around like we're tethered to something and we're just being dragged on the ground by our emotion, which is often the way we move through the world. Something happens to us, we're that. We become that thing. In that moment, we're just that. When we're sad, when someone breaks our heart, you know how it is. And we're just that. We're just that. And then we get led by that. The sun doesn't look as bright. Our friends don't matter anymore. I don't want to talk to this person. I don't want to eat anything. I just want to sit here. And I'm not saying grieving is not important. It's part of the process of getting over hurt. Except sometimes we kind of hang out there. And part of that is that we're caught in it. We've become that. We're kind of being dragged by that. We've allowed everything that we are, this beautiful being that we are, with all these wonderful, as much as we are anger at the moment, we can be joy, we can be everything. But in that moment, we've just allowed ourselves to become just that. And that means, I gave this example yesterday. For me, the ducks, you know, when you see the ducks in the water, and all you see is their tail and their foot in the air, so they're just like that. And then you see a duck next to them, and they're like sitting on top of the water. Of course they're not doing that. I'm doing that, right? Because that's how I feel it. I feel that the duck sitting on top of the water is like, you know, they're looking. They're deciding. See? Nikavea agrees. I heard an amen. But the one that's in the water, that's how we are when our emotion, when we become our anger. We are now completely that. We're like, we've been pulled down, and we're like, our feet is up in the air, and we're just like, no control. So that's this path, right? This is the path that allows us to sink into joy, but not to be taken completely by it. To realize and recognize our pains, but not to be completely taken by it. It's acknowledging the world that we live in. This is the world that we live in, right? It's that, again, it's the historic and historical and the ultimate dimension. Like recognizing and being in this world as it brings all the things to us, and to be able to manage it and decide how we're going to take care of it in that moment. Because sometimes we do have to respond appropriately. And we do have to take care of things that are happening. Because it is our responsibility to make the world a better place. It is our responsibility. Make no, there's no mistake about that. How are we to do it? How do we respond from a place of compassion and love? From the outside, it might look like we're being mean. It may even look like we're being violent. Right? It may look... The Dalai Lama said that sometimes we're acting from in a way that an outsider might look and think we are a violent person. But if we are in control and we are acting from a place where our intention is not to cause harm, but to heal. And this was in response to a remark after Osama bin Laden was killed. And apparently he responded, I guess, not in the way a Buddhist is supposed to respond, because there's that whole perception of how Buddhist-identified people should respond. And I guess his response wasn't one that was perceived as appropriate, meaning he didn't apologize for this person being killed. And in that response, because the newspaper people went after him, well, I thought you're nonviolent. How can you condone that? And this was his teaching from that, was that don't mistake what you saw as something that's violent if you don't understand completely the intention of why it was done. And if the intention is that you are not attempting to harm, or you, in a way, you're even helping that person not to continue to cause harm to others. So this is a really sticky thing, right? It's very controversial to talk about violence and nonviolence, especially in Buddhist spaces, right? So I'm on sticky, controversial ground, right? And yet, I think if we look at the teachings, and not just the teachings of Buddhism, but if we look at Gandhi and his life, if we look at Dr. Martin Luther King, what it came down to was, what was the intention? When people in the civil rights movement in the 1960s carried arms, and I mean the black people who were oppressed, or in that, at that point, the way they were being oppressed, were carrying arms, what was their intention? What was the intention of the white Southerners carrying arms? What was their intention? Do you understand that? Because that's really, really important. We like to paint Dr. King, which is an interesting way to paint him, without his wholeness. And his wholeness is deep. Without that understanding, that wholeness, we miss a big part of this man, this revolutionary thinker, teacher, spirit guide, warrior. So it's really important to understand these great leaders. They teach us so much. When we get away from the, you know, kind of the socialized rhetoric that, in many times, I think with black people and brown people, we tend to want to stick to them, the ones we want to call leaders. And I say we, I mean America and white supremacist states. We want to stick them with this kind of love, softness thing, which is beautiful. And yet there's so much deeper where that love came from. How did that love come to be like that? What was the suffering that birthed that love? That's the depth that we have to go to. And so when you hear me speak of violence and nonviolence, I'm speaking from it, from that level. So it's just my way of cautioning you to not think that I'm condoning violence. It's my way of saying that understanding, really, intention around our actions is really, really important. And it is part of this path. It's part of where we're in that moment of clarity. We choose to act from love. And that acting from love can look different. But if we're acting from love, that's what's most important. The action may look the same, but the intention would be different. So yesterday we talked a little bit about breathing, the simple thing of breathing, that in that moment of intense emotion, what tools do we have? What's this practice look like in reality? How do we take it home? And it was really beautiful in our Dharma sharing group where folks shared about how they practice. And I think that's what we're here to share with each other, is in the midst of some interaction, how can we remember to go back to this breath? One breath, just one breath, immediately changes the whole thing. It's the difference between awareness and non-awareness. One breath stops it, and now we see it. And that energy of awareness is already an energy that's transforming that thing, because energy is like that, right? Awareness is energy. So if you become aware of something, you've now directed an energy on the thing that you're looking at. So that mere awareness, that breath that allows you the awareness, has already begun to transform that anger that was about to solidify. And even though you may still feel angry after one breath, or fearful, or sad, or joyful, it's still different, because it has an energy that has been brought to hold it, right? And another breath, and maybe three breaths. And in three breaths, your response will be different. The intention, you're going to remember, because remember, mindfulness is about remembering and keeping in mind. It's also keeping in mind our precepts of non-harm, non-stealing, non-sexual misconduct, non-lying and spreading rumors that aren't true, non-intoxicants. So we're not only mindful and remembering, but we have this sort of ethical framework that we're keeping in mind. And so we are mindful in that moment. Hey, someone just said this thing. And in that moment, we're like, I believe. So you see my history, right? It's like in the past, it would be like, y'all can just stay there. You know? But now, because of this practice for me, I'm able to stop and I remember these five precepts that I've taken, that I don't want to cause harm, that I don't want to steal, no sexual misconduct, no lying, and no intoxicants. And if I am mindful of what's happening in front of me, and I have this ethical framework that holds me, it's always there, right? You're remembering that too. Then your intention and your action comes out of that. That's a different response, because you've remembered not only what's happening right there, but you're mindful of these precepts that you've decided you want to live your life by. That changes the whole game. It's a game changer. It's done. It's like, once you know, I'll tell you, sometimes I wish I hadn't met the precepts. But not, right? Not frequently, though. Not frequently. But there are times that, you know, when people do some craziness, you know, you just want to, like, yeah, you know, like, so it's in me, right? This stuff is in me. It's in all of us. And so I have to practice. If I don't practice, I will do crazy things like I used to do. And I did. Every single thing, I'm sure. You can't name one I didn't do. And it's not that I'm proud of it, I'm just being real. Because my practice is a practice of experience. It's coming out of the hole. It's coming out of the darkness. It's coming out of the pain. That's very tiring. But letting go of that pain gives me so much more energy, because pain takes energy, right? It requires energy. You know, we have energy in us, and there's things happening all the time coming at us. But we have just so much energy. Sometimes anger comes at us. And are we going to put all our energy? Say this is our ball of energy. That's what we got for the day. That's our allotment. Something comes at us. Are we going to put all our energy into this and leave all these other things? One of this might be the sunshine. One of this might be a child smiling at us. But when our energy is all here, we don't see that child smile. That child walks right by us and we're like, so everything is, so it's like, it's like one and one for me, right? It's like if I've got 10 units of energy, and it's not like that, okay, but I'm just trying to make a point. If I've got 10 units of energy and something happens and I put 10 units of energy into that and this child walks by, I have no energy to see that child. I have no energy to see the sunshine or that flower. Or someone I love that just might have made me this beautiful meal. I don't have that energy anymore because what did I do? I just put everything into this ball of anger. I'm tied up right now. I'm like literally tied up. So what this practice does, it says, when something is happening, do I have the clarity to choose what I do with my energy? And it's guided by this ethical framework of those precepts. And so maybe I'll put 2 units into this because it requires it. And maybe this person is, you know, acting too crazy and maybe you didn't take the energy to address it last time. So maybe you need to take care of it. So maybe you'll put 2 here, but you still have 8 that you can still see all the things that are going on. You can still live life in the present moment because you're not tied up in one thing that's pulling everything. That's when we're not present. We're not present for what else is there because we're caught up in this thing. And it's not just the thing that's happening here, right? It could be the past, a memory, some hurt or pain that we haven't been able to heal. We put our energies there too, you know. Past trauma takes energy. We know that. When you get a headache, what do you want to do? Nothing. That's a physical pain that has taken all our energy. And all we can do is lay down, turn the lights out, cover our heads. If we get nauseated, worse. We can't do anything. It's like that. That's what trauma is. That's what past trauma does. It takes our energy. So when we start healing, all of a sudden we're like open. And it's a physical opening. It's like the shoulders go back, the head goes up to the sky. We get rooted. Our hearts keep opening. Our walk's different. We walk firmly on the earth because we are here and we belong and we're healed. And we don't feel like what the world has been telling us, that we're not deserving. The whole world looks different. You see that flower and you just stand and stare at it. And people pass you and think you're nuts. But I dare say that we are not nuts when we notice the flower. So I think I'm going to stop there. I went over time. I apologize.